It's 5 and 10 from Skywatch TV for April 9th, 2019. I'm Derek Gilbert. A special program today as we have a guest in studio recording some programs for future broadcast on our network program, Skywatch TV. It is a it's about a book, a coffee table book, which I happened already to own. So it was a lot of fun to get to meet the author here behind this project. He is the founder of Ezra Adventures, a tour company that specializes in taking guests through the heart of the biblical lands, the lands of the Bible, Judea and Samaria, and a book that shows then and now photos demonstrating and documenting the fulfillment of Bible prophecy. We welcome the author, Doug Hershey. Doug, welcome to Skywatch TV.
Thanks so much. This has been great.
The prophecy, and in fact, you cite it on the back cover of the Bible, Ezekiel 38:6. What is it, and how does your book document the fulfillment of that prophecy?
Ezekiel 36 is this unique prophecy that's spoken to...
Yeah, I said 36:8. It's 36:8. It's
36:8, yeah. Ezekiel 36, God is talking specifically to the land, and that's just a really special passage. Normally, we think of prophecy being spoken to people, and God is saying, speak to the mountains, to the hills, to the ravines, to the valleys, and basically says when the Jewish people return, when the land again becomes their possession, the branches will put forth fruit, the land will be cultivated and sown, these waste and forgotten cities, places like Jerusalem, places like Shiloh, like places, you know, all through the land, these biblical heartland cities, they'll come back to life, and they are. And God said he'll multiply the man and beast on the land. He even tells the land, I'll treat you better than what you've ever been treated before. You know, and we've seen that with just what's already happening in the land, exporting the agricultural, the technological things that are coming out of the land. There is so much that's happening right now that was directly foretold in Ezekiel 36 about the land reviving and how Israel will blossom in these days. That part of what we did here was we had gotten 2,200 old photos taken between the 1880s and the 1940s, and went back with a photographer to reshoot those angles to show how much the land really has revived under Israeli sovereignty.
Mm. So you're getting just like a side-by-side, A, B comparison.
Yeah, in the book, there's over 25 locations throughout all of Israel. There are over 100 photo comparisons of what it looked like prior to the establishment of or reestablishment of Israel in 48 to what it looks like now. So, and some of them are just absolutely stunning.
As we are recording this, Israelis are going to the polls to vote, and it's been a rather contentious election, as
Indeed.
Elections often are. And Israelis, I found, are a little more blunt in their speech than we Americans are.
Yes, they are.
So Benjamin Netanyahu is fighting for his political survival, but there are, interestingly, in this election, one of the candidates who's running on a party that is relatively new, Moshe Feiglin. Made a statement last week that the time to rebuild or time to build the third temple is now.
Yes.
So, you know, not only are we seeing the fulfillment of prophecy through the blooming of the land, but we're seeing calls to build a structure that we see in the Bible.
Yes.
Is a marker on the timeline towards God, you know, putting a stop to all of this and saying, that's it. What the photographs that you took of the Temple Mount from then and now, how has the Temple Mount changed over the years?
The Temple Mount is, a lot of it was just forgotten and run down. I mean, there's not photos in the book, but I have some other photos in my laptop of parts of the Temple Mount being used as a cabbage patch in only the 1920s, 1930s. That's actually going to be a part of a new book that I'm actually working on right now.
Wow.
That it's just, I mean, nobody cared about Jerusalem 100 years ago. And today, when the Jewish people are back, the land is reviving, when suddenly there are being calls, like Moshe Feiglin making, it's definitely kind of turning up the a few different levels on the prophetic time clock, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to say too, with this election, there are things coming out in this Israeli election that have never come out before. Number one, the call of saying we need to build the temple. Netanyahu has said a couple different things. There will be no Palestinian state, and if I'm prime minister again, we will annex all of Judea and Samaria.
Yes, like, I saw that.
Let's put all of that together. Nobody's ever said those things before. So just the fact that you have a couple other candidates that are just saying, look, these are the facts on the ground, this is what we need to do, and come hell or high water, this is what we're going to do. Now, we'll see how all of that unfolds, but just simply the fact that there are Israeli politicians that are just sort of throwing caution to the wind and saying, we need a temple, Judea and Samaria is ours. just the fact that those are being publicly, you know, broadcast throughout the world, this election is unique aside from any other Israeli election so far. And I'm excited to see how it goes.
What would be the significance of Israel annexing Judea and Samaria?
Well, really, I mean, going back to 1967 when Jordan was in control of that, Israel actually had no plans to take Judea and Samaria at that time. In 1967, they had their hands full with Egypt in the south and Syria in the north, and within a very short amount of time, and you can read through some of these historical accounts, there's no battle plan. There's no high command strategy to take Jerusalem or Judea and Samaria. At the end of the Six-Day War, they're suddenly in charge of it. Now, the UN at that time drafts a resolution 242, which then becomes quite a contentious declaration, but basically says for the first time ever in military history, if Israel should give back the land that they took in a defensive war. Now, according to rules of engagement and international rules of warfare, if you're attacked from a particular piece of land, you fight back and then take that land is yours.
Mm-hmm.
And the UN is saying, okay, well, you should give that land back for peace. And for the first time ever, that suggestion is being made. Israel actually says yes and says, okay, if Jordan makes the call, if Syria makes the call, we'll have that discussion. The call has never come. Now, in that time, since 1967, the economy that had grown between 67 up to the Oslo Accords in 1995-96, when the Palestinian Authority was starting to give autonomy in some of those areas, the economy in that area from 67 to 94 was the fourth fastest growing economy on earth under Israeli sovereignty. The land was responding. The Israeli medical teams had gone through the land, gone through Judea and Samaria and what used to be Jordan, and were eradicating things like smallpox and measles and mumps and like just things, polio, like dealing things that the Jordanians had never dealt with. And so, again, just showing the fact that when the land is under Israeli sovereignty, the land will physically respond. The land, everyone's standard of living is raised, and that's part of what we've seen throughout Judea and Samaria. Now, the call to annex that is clearly a security issue, which is a very clear one for sure. But, there's been Israeli sovereignty in that region for a while. So to me, it's as far as safety and security and the growth and the economy that's been growing, it only makes sense. It's only what's been happening already.
Yeah. So what the rest of the world calls the West Bank, which implies that it belongs to somebody other than Israel, is really the heart of what we read in the Bible.
Exactly.
I mean, some of the sites in the Bible that are key to biblical history.
Exactly. When you hear the term the West Bank, what that refers to, it's the West Bank of the Jordan River that Israel took in a defensive war when they took it from Jordan. So there was never Palestine there. Prior to 1967, that land was called Jordan. Prior to that, it was under the British Mandate of Palestine or the region of Palestine. Prior to that, it was the Ottoman Empire. You know, it goes on and on back through history. But when you hear the term the West Bank, what you're really talking about, it's the same territory as Judea and Samaria. It's where 80% of the Bible happened, and it has nothing but Jewish heritage dating back for thousands of years.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see how this election turns out and
Absolutely.
What the political consequences thereof. Watch SkyWatch TV, our network broadcast program, will feature two programs with Doug Hershey about his book, Israel Rising. Sharon and I have a copy of this at home, and the photographs are so well placed. It makes it really easy to see A versus B and how things have changed over the last 70 years, the fulfillment of Bible prophecy in the blooming of the land, but also in some of the political things that are happening right now as we record this. This is an exciting time to be alive.
It really is, and much of what we're seeing in politics, in the unfolding of just current events, I mean, a lot of this stuff has very clearly been laid out in Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Isaiah, Amos. Pick a prophet. They're all talking about the restoration of Israel, and that's what's happening right now.
Well, for God's reasons, we've been chosen to live in these days, and as our friend Dr. Michael Lake says, just imagine the prophets and apostles leaning over the rails of heaven, cheering us on as we get closer to that ultimate finish line. With Doug Hershey, the author of Israel Rising, I'm Derek Gilbert, and we thank you for watching as we keep watch. This is 5 in 10 from SkyWatch TV.
And I want to share something. I've asked the Lord in preparation for this book, I said, Lord, I'm asking you to show me some of the things that have kept believers from embracing their calling. And it was as if he said, Joe, I want you to share with people, with believers in particular, that they need to stop viewing themselves the way the world has made them view themselves, or mm-hmm. how the world views them. Mm-hmm. This could be at work. Maybe your job has pounded you until you feel like you have less worth. Maybe it's a spouse. Maybe it was an abusive family member or mm-hmm. friend. Maybe it's a vocation, maybe it's a venue. Something in your life has made you feel like you possess less value. Mm-hmm. But God wants you to start viewing yourself the way that He views you. His perfect creation, designed just the way He did for His reasons, for such a time as this. And your future can be a white canvas filled with possibilities, a totally untold story yet. Everything behind the canvas, this is your past.
Right.
Doesn't matter anymore. But what you begin to paint from here on out, what is ahead of you, totally there for the making if you'll step in to the calling that He's commissioned you to walk in.
That's right.
Does that
Absolutely.
Make sense?
Yes, yes.
Now ask yourself. Ask yourself a question. We know that God is not surprised by anything that we see happening politically, culturally. We know that in the year 2019, God is in complete control, is He not?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Absolutely.
And every generation that has come before us and the one that we're facing now, God provides a plan, a redemptive plan for these people.
Mm-hmm.
And He always puts surrogates of His gospel on the earth to convey that message of hope to every generation, does He not?
Yes,
that's
absolutely.
Right, yes.
So
uh-huh.
while we may feel like the world is falling apart and everything is unraveling, did God not put a plan in place to redeem this generation too?
Absolutely.
Of course.
My question is, what does that plan look like? God's not surprised by any of the stuff that we see. What was His plan? What does it look like? Who are His surrogates? You are that plan. You are the surrogate. You're the one put here right now for such a time as this to do exactly what God has commissioned you to do to reach this generation.